sit right back, then you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. Nice shot.
Why, thank you, John. I tried not to cheat. I tried to honestly sink that beagle, the HMS Beagle, and Darwin with it. I am Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski, and we'd like to welcome you to another fun-filled, energy-packed episode of
Sink the Beagle. It's packed with something. I'm not sure. I hope fun and energy. And we do not want to cheat. And today we're going to talk, John, about cheaters.
Cheaters never win. Cheaters, that's what my mom told me. Well, I used to win at cheating at games when I was a kid with my sisters. But I never enjoyed it as much because they were so easy to beat.
You didn't have to.
You know what? I could have been a scientist.
You could have been a scientist. Now, what do you mean by that, John?
Actually, there's been a recent paper published by some creationists, by Jerry Bergman, the epidemic of fraud that exists in science today. It's kind
science.
Of he's kind of having a tattletale on other scientists.
Fraud in science. Now, I've always thought of science, you know, my original Hollywood-produced image of scientists is, here is a man of integrity. Here is a man who wants to know truth at all costs. Oh, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, that's about right. they had you duped. Boy, what an idiot you've been.
Well, yeah, okay. We don't need to stay there.
No, there are some scientists like that, and we don't want to degrade the entire group, but there has been a great rise, and for profit or for whatever, prestige, there's been a great rise in fraud. And we want to, of course, look at it from evolutionary science. We're not talking here about Piltdown Man or Nebraska Man of old.
Yes, all the olders.
All the old ones that they were obviously, or the with the
Haeckel's embryos, and
all the stuff from the Icons Evolution type stuff that you find in your textbooks that are bad science.
That's bad science.
Yeah.
And even though they were purporting, and there was maybe even a motive occasionally there to purport something as true when it wasn't true. But what we're talking about here is specifically studies, the famous research projects that scientists live in, and then, of course, live to write about and publish in scientific journals. And those research projects often have a conclusion, a point to make, something to prove, and based on that, other research is sometimes done or assumed to be so, and products are done, and policies and medicines are developed, and everything else.
You go back to, and this is intense research centers. We're not talking here, and we're not going to be using data from our make-believe ideas. These are actual data from their own journal articles like Nature and other places that are quoting people that have done fraudulent work at John Hopkins or MIT biochemists and stuff, that are actually putting out fraudulent data.
Papers coming out of Harvard and Yale and so forth.
We're not talking typos here either. That's one thing, too.
No, and that's a very critical point to make, John. We're not talking about people that made just honest mistakes.
There is some of that, and that's acceptable.
These are people that are playing with the numbers, playing with the data to come to a conclusion that they want to come to.
Yes, and just notice this one quote. I'm going to quote from an article, an editorial in the science journal Nature. Long ago, he says, are the days when scientific frauds could be dismissed as the work of the mad rather than the bad.
Ooh.
In other words, we're not talking madmen here who are just
scientists.
Mad scientists. We're talking about bad scientists.
Mm-hmm.
The unhappily extensive record of misconduct suggests that many fraudsters believe their faked results, so attempts at replication by others represent no perceived threat.
Oh, in other words, they really believed that what they were doing was right and that other researchers would come along and prove them right, even when they fudge the numbers.
Yes, that they think that they can get away with it and others will want to do the same for the same reasons, maybe because unethical reasons, I'm assuming here, that they did.
One of the problems with a research project like this, John, though, coming to some kind of conclusion is that often when a study is done by somebody perceived to be reputable and the method's pretty good, then literally research will not need to be done in that particular narrow area because it's already been done. And so they assume those results and they base some assumptions for further work and further things based on what it turns out to be is something that's not so.
And it may cost millions of research dollars. You never know, or at least tens of thousands. In some cases, I would assume if you were following up on someone else's work and you're going to make this nice big breakthrough, what if you're in the area of genetics or immunology or somewhere in the medicine fields? Mm-hmm. It costs tens of thousands of dollars to set up these, a lot of these experiments and produce these various agents, and you're basing it on a fraudulent study.
And sometimes these have ramifications for people's lives. I mean, if you're talking about medications and treatment regimes that come out of research, you're playing with things that are pretty serious.
And we're not talking just fraudulent in the ideas of plagiarism, which is actually becoming more rampant as well. It's interesting, though, to notice even like some of the places where this is occurring. Nature again quotes another editorial, which says that these are happening not just in your Hickville places. These are happening in the most distinguished research institutions: Cornell, Harvard, Sloan Kettering, Yale, and so on. They earlier had mentioned Princeton and Baylor and other places.
And that quote mentions that these have been blamed on people who are acknowledged by their colleagues to have been intellectually outstanding. So these are not people that are fudging it because
they're wannabes.
Yeah, that they're not brilliant people. They are brilliant people.
And they're doing it. And they have to retract articles, and there's all kinds of these situations where they're, you know, doing not anyone a service but themselves.
And not just in America, across in other parts of the world. I know in Australia they were talking about coming up with some kind of a research integrity office of research integrity, just to make sure that the findings have been done correctly. And it's interesting to trace how some of these things are discovered, John. It seems like more often than not, some leading scientists will write on a subject. It's published, and in the study, they will be talking about some things that, experiments that they conducted, and they'll have some assistants that might look at this study and say, the assistant said, no, wait a minute, I was there. We didn't do that experiment.
We didn't do this. What are we talking about?
What are you talking about there? And that's how it gets discovered and talked about.
Well, there was a group, a couple of gentlemen by the name of Broad and Wade, that deceit has not been the exception, they say, but the trend, they're calling it, and there's been a great extent, you know, in the past 30 years, you know, they're wondering just how much is up, maybe up to 30% of all papers have a level of fraudulent data, fudged numbers. We're not talking falsification, extensive plagiarism, whatever it might be. Some of, and not of it necessarily experimental error. A lot of it can be just bias as well.
Well, let's use as an illustration. I hate to use a name, but we will, for the sake of just making you understand that we're not making this up. Here's a case involving an evolutionary biologist by the name of Anders Møller, who has published over 450 articles in several books. A report noted that a government committee has ruled that Møller is responsible for data fabricated in connection with an article that he co-authored in 1998 and subsequently retracted. The charges cast a shadow over the relatively tight-knit world of behavioral ecology, the study of mating and other behaviors in animals' natural environment. One point that's indisputable is Mueller's reputation as a towering figure in the field. Mueller has been a key proponent of the idea that traits such as long symmetrical tails and barn swallows, which attracts potential mates, are a sign of beneficial genes. In other words, that has to do with evolution. He has also shown that stress caused by environmental factors such as parasites can lead to the development of asymmetrical body parts, which is another way of evolutionary change.
And so they're trying to make public policy based on this stuff, on his studies, and his studies are fraudulent.
And now they're just wondering if they can believe anything that he has said in his articles.
It's incredible. And when you start looking at that, you know, there are times, you know, and rightfully so, that people misuse scripture. Mm-hmm. You know, that people twist scripture and twist the text out of context and make it say something it doesn't.
It's the human condition, isn't it?
You know, and the Bible talks about following teachers with our own itchy ears, or people who wrest scripture out of its context and try to make it say what it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Well, we're not, you know, it's a human condition of our fallenness. Mm-hmm. Scientists are as guilty, and even maybe more guilty than in some respects even scriptural people. So the science is not this pure, desire for truth.
Self-correcting,
it's more or less evolutionary dog-eat-dog, get published, get rich, and get out while you're getting good kind of environment.
That's kind of a mean way to put it, but yeah.
There is a level of that.
There is a level there.
Follow the dollar grants, folks. Follow the dollar grants.
You know, what I'm almost more concerned about in this, John, is not so much the dishonesty issues that they're having to deal with, but what I'm worried about is here much of the data that evolutionists have presented in their proofs for evolution, I'm just wondering how much of it is believable, even at a real basic truth level. How much of it may have been fudged a little bit because we know. Let's use the illustration of the Archaeoraptor that National Geographic, we've used that in Sink the Beagles before. This bird fossil that had a tail glued into it that made it look like half reptile, half bird. And
there's a transitional link that proves evolution.
Oh man, they were excited. And yet it was clearly a falsified fossil. It wasn't correct. And the point is they didn't even catch it because they weren't looking in the right places. Their bias didn't allow them to see that. And I'm wondering how much, I'm going to put supposedly data or truth is invisible to them. Because they just simply don't see it. They don't want to look, and they don't want to review it and find stuff that disproves or doesn't support their theory.
You know, the irony is that, you know, I like a friend of ours, Elaine Kennedy, was talking about worldview, and she says worldview is the thing that it determines what questions I ask about data.
Right.
And trying to look at every conceivable possible explanation of data. And what you're sharing with us, it sounds like the scientists in the Archaeoraptor case didn't even want to know data. Is it a good fossil? Is it genuine? They so wanted to believe that they ignored asking the right questions. They ignored what could be true. And as a result, they got shamefully embarrassed. And we're kind of glad about that. I hate to say it.
We don't bring that up from time to time.
You know?
Yeah.
We have a text, though, that we think is a good torpedo text for this whole concept of truth-telling. And it comes from the Gospels of John, Jesus' own words.
Jesus says it is possible to know the truth. He says, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Free from incrimination, free from error, free, and sometimes truth is a matter of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And what we say, what we do, what we believe will make all the difference in the world.
If you seek truth, you will find it.
Yep.
And I think that means being very, very, very self-introspective and say, I've got biases, I've got worldviews, I bring a lot of things to the table when I'm looking for truth. Oh, Lord, help me to lay aside all preconceptions and help me to listen to your spirit and to read your word and get exactly what I need out of it today.
Yeah, not his word both in scripture, but it's also his word in nature.
Absolutely.
Help me ask the right questions of why do I see things, and help me be patient to realize that I may not get all answers.
Right.
But there is nothing wrong with a level of ignorance if it's honest ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't mind honest ignorance. I can honestly say, and there's lots of questions I have scientifically that I don't understand in our world.
That's right. I'm going to ask my angel a few things when I see him.
Oh, quite a few. And so, and Jesus also said in John in 14, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. If you really want to find the ultimate answers, you have to. It only comes being involved with the maker, designer, the information giver, the logos of our entire existence.
The word made flesh and the word spoken by God.
Yeah.
It's all the same source. It agrees with each other. And it is the way of finding out what is really true, not only on who we are, but where we came from. And the good news is where we're going to go.
Yep. And Jesus again said, "If you shall know the truth, you shall know me, and I will set you free."
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.